Hello, everyone. This is producer Peter. We've got a really nice episode today. We have repeating guest Tank back to talk about Francis Ford Coppola's Rumblefish, which is a really interesting movie that we have a fair amount of stuff to say about. But the bummer is that after doing the recording, I found that the audio file for Nick, myself, and Tank corrupted, and we lost that. So we're using our backup scratch track, which doesn't sound as good and, you know, has some issues, but I tried to clean it up as much as possible to make it decent, and I hope you still enjoy listening. And Sean's audio is great, so there's that. Anyway, enjoy.
Oh God. Oh my God.
So there's a guy who dresses like Batman and then just jet skis around Lake Washington. Or Lake Union.
I have not seen this.
I don't know. It's fucking sick.
I don't know if it was Lake Washington. I think it is Washington. There's a guy with a hot dog motorboat.
Oh, I saw a video of hot dog boat. I didn't know that was in Washington.
I was talking about that earlier today. I was like, if that ever happened, somebody should wake me up.
He was rolling around just blasting AC/DC's Thunderstruck.
Of course.
Like, I like Batman being non-stealth at all. Just like, look, I'm
really over the top.
I'm boxing over.
Wait, did you guys move to Portland or did I? Because this is weird.
I think it was funny. I was like, every time there is a slightly horny, slightly violent, surreal dreamscape movie, you're like, man, we should get
tickets. We should probably,
yeah.
Everybody, like, it's like a French gangster who took some Ambien and woke up with a moderate hard on.
Yeah,
like let's make a movie about that and bring in Tank and have him talk about it. So let's do it.
Perfect. Yeah. I already have the French gangster
motorcycle.
We were talking about his day. I was hoping that like every time we talk to each other, we just start with Rusty James. Rusty James.
Rusty James.
Rusty James.
Every sentence starts and ends with Rusty James.
Oh Rusty my God. James.
I love that his name is just Russell James, and they're like, nope, Rusty James. Mm-hmm. Ooh, what a cool gang name.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, what would be your gang name?
Fang.
Fang.
Dang, I was thinking Fang, too.
Yeah.
See, I think it makes more sense for me to be Fang, seeing as everything I wear is from Wild Fang. Mine actually makes sense.
Why is everybody doing Fang?
It's like a tight-ass
gang. Capitalism.
Yeah.
Fuck you, you corporate shill.
I would be Scratchers. Scratchers. Like Tank is my business.
That's my business.
That's what I take into the straight world. Mm-hmm. But like Scratchers is where I go at night.
So this is Cage Match, apparently. Colin around about way of meeting Nicolas Cage. I'm your host, Sean, here with my co-host.
And I'm Nick.
And our producer.
Peter, hello. Hey, you kind of did it better this time.
Yeah, I haven't been practicing.
You've been practicing bullshit.
I forgot we were even doing a podcast anymore until you texted me the other day.
Yeah, we got to do all the back catalog. We're getting all the bangers, the movies that don't actually feature Nick Cage.
Somewhat feature Nick Cage.
Yeah. Well, yeah, when you're like, what, uncle or second cousin makes the movie and you have to show up because your name is, because you're a Coppola.
Yeah.
We're in the, and also Nick Cage genre. Era now.
The what?
And also Nick Cage.
Oh yeah. It's also the Nepo version for these first couple movies. So
Yeah.
Sofia Coppola, I gotta just say, sucks so fucking bad.
Oh, Sofia Coppola is still terrible.
I cannot stand her at all. Like her directing work is fine. As an actor, and I know she's a kid in this, she sucks. She's so bad.
I fully expected her to get retroactively better. And then just suck later in her career? No, not true.
Started bad, ended bad.
Also returning this week, our friend Tank. Hi, Tank.
Hey, everybody. I'm here not to besmirch the career of Sofia Coppola.
Only the acting career.
Oh, I don't care at all. I really just don't care. Like, there's not a movie that she's in. I'm like, oh, that's the one I want to watch. This was, by the way, this is a great movie. We'll talk about that later. But you could put any kid in there. Kids are terrible.
Kids are terrible actors.
Nine times out of ten.
Well, how would you feel if Finn Wolfhard was...
The sister.
What is sister? At any age.
Yeah, sure. I would love that, but that's a really bold thing. It's a pretty expressionistic movie anyway.
So 27 year old.
Really like gender flip a daughter character and like not acknowledge would have been outstanding.
That silly shaggy like fucking Joey Ramone hair he's got.
So this week we are discussing the 1983 film Rumblefish, which I'd never heard of before. And now I have seen and enjoyed.
Okay, good. There we go. We got to the end of it.
I'm going to speak like this so you never know when my sentence ends.
So you will never understand if I actually watched the movie or did research.
We will know when you're done because you will end it with Rusty James.
Rusty James.
Yeah.
Beautifully, though, you're on a separate audio track, so Peter can speed you up 75% and you'll just sound like, I guess like me. Just fast and annoying.
Yeah. Welcome to Cage Match later episodes where we exclusively discuss the mechanics of podcasting.
Yeah. That's what the people are here.
So
are there people left?
Is anybody familiar with S.E. Hinton?
No.
Is that an author that rings for anybody?
No.
So I mean, the name and that
it's a she.
Oh, yeah. So I'm not familiar with
you. So S.E. Hinton is an Oklahoma author, born probably in the 1940s. Began writing really young, like in her teenage years. Wrote The Outsiders, Rumblefish, a handful of other books. So what's interesting is like Coppola did this and Outsiders and released them in the same year, 6 months apart. Outsiders is a very straightforward story. This one is, I think, much crazier. I think we'll get into it. So S.E. Hinton was like, I don't know, the James Patterson of Oklahoma? I don't know. Or like, oh, wait, well, actually, let me back up. It's more of like the Stephen King. And not, she didn't do horror, but she was heavily identified with the region and wrote stories about what it was like to be in like Tulsa, Oklahoma in the 50s. So while I think this probably takes place in Missouri or whatever, I don't really know. It's ultimately like she was an Oklahoma author. The fun thing about The Outsiders was you could read that book in the seventh grade and you could write a book report on it every single year until your senior year of high school and still get like an A in like basic English. So she was sort of an outsized character growing up because she wrote like about what it was like to be in that world. And so I grew up in Oklahoma and that's what it was. But I will tell you, the movie we saw today looked nothing like any version of Oklahoma I'd ever seen in my entire life.
Because it's in black and white.
That's exactly true.
Yeah. And they have a color there now.
Everything Oklahoma was mostly like a sepia yellowish tone until about 1985. Then we started Ed Reds and stuff like that.
Bold shift.
But yeah. But like Outsiders, if you watch that one, and like Outsiders just like won a bunch of Tonys like a year or so ago as an opera. Not opera, sorry, as a musical. It's super straightforward. It's a bunch of handsome men and handsome situations.
Pony boy and soda pop.
Yeah, and it's like all of the most handsome dudes from the 1980s.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, it was like this one, Swayze and
like who else Cruise was in it.
Yeah, Tom
like it's just everybody. Right? It's like Rob Lowe.
Yeah.
It's Emilio Estevez. It's just everybody. Everybody who was like remotely like this is a potentially fuckable human being in the future got in that movie. And this one, like they toned it back a little bit, but you still have like these really great people pop in.
Oh, had a terrific cast.
Yeah.
So a real banger of a hidden gems cast.
Yeah. My favorite was Tom Waits for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Benny.
Absolutely.
Benny.
What a great character.
Although I will say the designer in me hates the B being used for Benny's billiards, because the first time I read that, I'm like, Benny's Illiards? What's that? Even when they showed it again later, that's how my mind read it.
That's actually Annie's billiards.
Annie's billiards.
No, because the B and the Benny is like one font.
Whatever.
The Benny is hanging out with Tom Waits.
Yeah.
It's where you're getting movie hang.
Tank, do you want to take a quick synopsis of the film? What's it about for our listeners?
All right. So you have Rusty James, who is the younger brother of what was the lead gang member of a pretty prominent group of young men who just fought nonstop in whatever city they're in. Rusty is like the heir apparent, but is a little dumber, a little less charismatic,
a lot dumber,
yeah. And just does not have what it takes to carry on. But at the exact same time, his older brother, whose name I never really got, to be honest with you, a really good Mickey Rourke, a really good Mickey Rourke.
Fantastic.
Like, you forget, like, what a wonderful actor, presence that guy has on stage.
Yeah, he disappeared into that one.
Yeah.
It's so weird to see Mickey Rourke before he became a mannequin that came alive in a trash compactor.
Yes, right. Like, we were talking about this on text. Like, he went into bare knuckle boxing, or he was boxing, just got the crap kicked out of him and did a whole bunch of plastic surgery and just, like, I don't know. I think his body, there's like a body dysmorphia thing. I'm no clinician, but I'll diagnose people on podcasts all day long. But anyway, so Motorcycle Boy is basically the king, and he has come back after a period of time in California, which he basically has a religious experience where he realizes that the lives of the kind of rumble like culture that they had been a part of was basically hollow, and he was going in a dead end direction, and ultimately was going to wind up in a dead end direction. And at the end, essentially sacrifices himself in some way in order to either evolve Rusty James or to end the culture or whatever. But it's just a very nihilistic movie, I think, in its heart. Like, there's not a lot of like hope at the end of it.
No,
it tries to get there and never really reaches it. It's also like visually just very expressionistic. Like, nothing about it, like, so I was watching it, and at the very beginning I was thinking, like, this is like a musical with no actual like musical sequences in it. Like, every scene looks like it's going to lead up to like the Jets or whatever. They're gonna start snapping and like dance fighting, but they just like fight, or they just do a thing. And like, I don't know, I hated it for the first 20 minutes, but by the end I was like, this is killer.
It took me about 20 minutes to really kind of get into the groove of it. But once I realized this is just a stage play, like, this is, if I saw this on stage, if I saw, like, if you, I had a character named Rusty James, who was only referred to as Rusty James constantly on stage, perfectly fine with it. In a movie, I'm like, this is weird and uncomfortable.
Well, even there's like a fight scene where one of the guys gets knocked down in an alley, and like his leg does this huge like melodramatic kind of flop, and it's like, oh yeah, that would work on a stage definitely more than whatever the fuck that was. Also, how would you do the motorcycle hitting that fucking guy?
That is so cool.
Put that on stage.
That felt like something out of a 1980s video game, like a Double Dragon game where you can like shoot. Yeah,
the bicycle kick, motorcycle takedown.
He's the motorcycle boy. He shows up on his motorcycle, wrecks it to like kill a guy, and then like loses his whole like namesake. Then he's just Boy.
And that's why he's kind of drifting through the rest of the movie.
Mm. Oh, they steal that Yamaha or whatever.
Yeah. He has one more motorcycle.
Yeah.
But I loved the framing of everything. I loved like the abundance of fog machines. Even the final shot of Rusty James at on the California coast, where it's clearly just him on a soundstage with like a screen that is being back projected on. But the atmosphere of this whole film is just great. And like the weird angles, I visually just loved this film.
I think it's essentially an independent movie made by the person who made The Godfather.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It just feels, because like, again, he did Outsiders right before, and Outsiders is like a very straightforward, like, we're making a movie. And this felt like, so at the same time, you're getting like Jim Jarmusch is coming in. There's a lot of Down by Law kind of qualities there. There's a lot of this kind of like ultra indie, black and white, you know, motivated camera. Like, we're going to go really big and expressionistic with the way things are. Weird angles, the fish thing.
Yeah, in color fish.
There's that scene that's so good near the end where they're walking through the kind of, I don't know if it's like a fair, or maybe it's just downtown at night. And they're talking about how Motorcycle Boy is colorblind and also kind of deaf. And the sound drowns out and comes back in and drowns out and comes back in. He's talking about like why he can't see stuff. And like, I don't know, that's a artsy ass move to put. And it's like 10 minutes long. It's like not a short sequence.
Right.
That whole sequence, it took me a minute to catch on to it, but there's like, whenever the focus is on Motorcycle Boy talking, it like deadens the sound. And whenever we get back to Rusty James, it's much louder and you hear a lot more ambient sound. I thought that was a really nice touch.
Yeah. It's really carefully designed. Like, it's, again, it's an art house movie made by a person who made Godfather 1, 2, and Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
who went on to have a very weird career right after.
He has had a very weird career.
A very weird career. I thoroughly respect that.
Let's not ignore the Megalopolis of it all.
Or the Jack of it all.
Yeah.
He made Jack.
Well, I was forgetting about that.
Yeah, he made Jack. He made the Rainmaker. Yeah. He made some choices.
You said Jack, and my brain immediately said, oh, Simple Jack.
Oh, yeah.
What a terrific film. And it's like, oh, that's a film within a film.
No, Jack is the one, the Robin Williams, who is has that disease where he's a boy who ages too fast. And by the way, I knew
Benjamin Buttons or something.
But I knew a guy who actually had the disease, and it's so much more tragic.
Oh wow.
It's not like I'm 12 and I look like Robin Williams. It's like I'm 19 and like I have osteoporosis.
Oh, that's not so, like he wasn't able to buy you porn.
My 11-year-old friend can go get his beer. It's like, no, my 19-year-old friend needs a walker.
Sad.
So there's a story I want to tell here.
We don't do that here.
It's about the movie. So they're at the end and they're like looking at the fish, right? Those are like beta fish, rumble fish, whatever you want to call them, like you heard them call it, a lot of different things. So when I was 22-ish, I got a rental house with two other guys. We were in college. There was three bedrooms, so killer rental house, but one bedroom had an ensuite bathroom. And so that was like the desired bathroom. And we're like, well, how are we gonna decide who gets the bathroom? And so coin toss, drinking contest,
tried whatever, it all, never whatever. Won.
We were like, what if we went to Walmart and we all got three beta fish and we put them in one container, right? Mm-hmm. One mm-hmm. aquarium, and we let them fight to the death, and the last one alive got the room. So we did that. This is animal abuse. This is terrible. Right? Yeah. Again, I was a younger man. I didn't, you know, whatever. So we did that, and we put them all in one fishbowl. And over the course of the next 70 hours, they fought. Now, they don't fight like they go and they fight each other and then one dies. They slowly eat the fins of each other until they can't swim anymore and then go upside down and they float to the top and they die. And it was the saddest way I've ever won a bedroom. In my entire life. And like at the end, we were just like, can we just stop?
Yeah.
Can we just stop?
They're
already dead.
Was it your responsibility to flush them down your ensuite
toilet? It was. Actually, I did take care of all of it. And I feel terrible about this. Is I'm atoning out loud on this podcast. When I watched that scene, I was like, okay, I can finally clean my conscience.
So good. It's a chance for you to heal.
Yeah, it was.
Thank you for coming on Cage Match.
Cage Match, a chance for you to heal about animal abuse that you inflicted.
A therapeutic podcast about Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, it's not fun. It's
70 like, hours. Yeah, man. It's like,
oh, it was like 20 minutes. Oh, we would like go to work because we like all worked like night shifts and stuff. We'd go to work and come back and they'd still be like alive, but like barely anymore. Horrible.
Yeah, that's rough.
Anyway, not as romantic as a movie piece of that. Yeah.
But those fish at the end get set free and they all swim their own way.
Sure, yeah, they seemed happy.
Everything in an aquarium should go in a river.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Check it all in a river.
All goes in a river. That's fresh water. I'm sure.
Not invasive
species. I'm assuming that's the Missouri River. I'm sure that thing is perfectly great for it.
Definitely primed for it.
Yeah, and it's got the right pH balance and everything.
Exactly. They're going to do great.
Mm-hmm. So other cast of characters, you know, Diane Lane plays his girlfriend.
Yeah. Nicolas Cage plays Smokey.
Yeah.
Can we address the Nicolas Cage of it all?
Yeah. I liked his jacket, his Deuce's Wild jacket.
That was actually August Coppola's jacket from when they were kids.
Interesting.
And Francis was really big into the like brother story of this all, and it really connected. I went back and reread the Age of Cage portion of this, but yeah, so he was like, oh, you know, we'll get him to wear his dad's old, like, I don't know, gang jacket.
I guess Cage was not famous enough for the rusty part at this point.
Which, it's kind of too bad looking at it, because I feel like he would have done a good job. I mean, this early in his career, so it would have been a stretch, but like Matt Dillon did fine, but
he was fine.
He's Rusty James. We got it.
I think a lot of the like acting performances could be just qualified as fine.
Yeah.
Nobody was exemplary.
I think
Dennis Hopper.
Hopper
was great.
Hopper was good, but like the movie is like, oh, their contentious relationship with their father, and it's like, no, he seems like just a drinking buddy to them.
Yeah.
Like there seems to be no struggle between the father's drinking, except for, you know, obviously like Motorcycle Boy comes in and he's like playfully getting rid of the alcohol in the house sort of thing.
I mean, I think the contention is their dad's just an absentee drunk.
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah, but it never feels contentious. There's no, like, nobody seems to have a, like, it's, real problem, a developmental problem with it.
Or something because he's drunk.
But the problem is they're all trapped.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Mm-hmm. Like, he's, like, it's not that he's mean or cruel or, like, violent. He's just a trap. Like, he's a person who is, has to be taken care of. They have to be there for him. Like, he's just an ever-present, like, chaotic part of their life. And he's not terrible, but... I don't know. I don't think any movie was ever made worse with Dennis Hopper. I think like he's one of the few actors like, oh, you made that a little better every single time.
Yeah. Upset about him being in there. I enjoyed his performance. It just never felt like
you wanted a little more antagonism between
family. Well, everybody seemed so resigned to their place in life except for Motorcycle Boy. It's like, oh yeah, I am the dumb gang leader. Well, Smokey outsmarts Rusty James. And takes the gang, but he seems to be he seems to be the only one with any kind of ambition.
Yeah.
So. Like that was kind of the thing at the end though. There really was no gang. Like at the beginning, Rusty James is trying to make this whole big stink about like rumbling and shit, and we're led to believe that Smokey's kind of a coward. And the end he's just apathetic because he's like, you're dumb. It's like
the gang was dork and Beef Boy and Lawrence Fishburne.
Larry
Fishburne.
But like they're ultimately just playing at being gangsters, and Smokey's really the only one who sees that.
Yeah, I know, for real.
But I do think a lot of it is about that. Like it's not that it's like this really violent, terrible place. It's not great. But it's just like there's nowhere to go. It's like a dead end. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like Hopper was a dead end, and that's what they were. So when they were talking about the mom got out. Right. Yeah. That was the whole thing. She was not a dead end. Everybody's like, oh, she was crazy. She left. She's like, no, she was probably the sanest person in the entire group. But like everybody there was just like resigned to the space they were in. It's getting a little heavy. I'm back out real fast. In Praise of Diane Lane. wow. This is one of the, you bring me in for the horn stuff. So I'm going to put my horns on for a second. So it was Laura Dern in Wild at Heart, just was smoking, and Diane Lane comes in hot this whole fucking
thing. Oh yeah,
that's true.
So good. And like the fantasy sequence where she's like up on the thing, and she's like taking her clothes off, and like he's like in the wood shop or whatever, like, or like the machine shop, like what a great move. Just A plus.
It's so hard thinking about just high school back then, where like here's just a big old machine shop where I went to high school, it was like, we can afford a book for five of you.
Lucky. This movie, there were two parts that gave me like a little crisis. There was one line where someone's like, God, he's so old. He looks like 25.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, yeah, okay, that's kids talking, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then Hopper is like, I'm 40. I've only got 35 summers left in me. And I was like, Jesus fuck, is that all I have left?
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, that hit too. I'm like, holy 35 shit.
Summers doesn't sound like that many summers.
Oh, it's always fun. You never know when like the midlife crisis is gonna smash into you.
It's now, it's happening now.
Well, so I was talking about somebody the other day when we're like talking about Cheers and like how George Went was 34 when Cheers started. I was like, I feel a lot better. I look in the mirror at these days, I'm 43. I'm like, all right, I look significantly better than Dennis Hopper did at 40.
Right.
A different life. We're on different timelines.
Well, it's like Nick has pointed this out a few times. You used to be able to smoke inside everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And it was cool.
It was cool.
Super tight. Yeah.
Yeah.
Motorcycle Boy and Rusty James smoked quite a bit. Nick Cage, like, when they came out of the bar, Motorcycle Boy lights up a cigarette, then immediately throws it away.
Yeah.
That's a classic move.
And then Motorcycle Boy had that like fucked up busted cigarette that he was somehow miraculously able to smoke even though it was cracked, which doesn't work. All I could
think about though was just how cheap were cigarettes back then?
They were probably a buck. It'd have to be a buck, I think. A buck a pack.
Yeah. 18 bucks a pack, like last time I checked.
But when I quit smoking in 2007, they were $3 a pack in Oklahoma. I think they were probably like six out here at that time. Yeah, that was like, that was the end of it. But I, probably a buck. I remember my grandfather quit smoking when they got to 75 cents a pack, and that was like 1980 something.
Yeah, it was like $8 a pack up here when I quit.
Yeah.
And there was like quite a bit of smoking in Benny's Billiards, where people were having milkshakes and Cokes and just smoking away.
Yeah, chocolate milk.
Yeah, it's like, I'm going to crush a beer, but then give me a glass of chocolate milk, Benny.
Like, oh, man, can you imagine the phlegm if you have like 2 to 3 cigarettes and then like a glass of chocolate milk? That is coating the throat.
Repulsive. Yeah.
I will say, and I think a bunch of us have talked about this for a while, if I could have any wish from like a really wiener ass genie or something like that, like it could make me like ultimately powerful, it would just be like, I would love to smoke with no repercussions. Mm. It doesn't smell bad. It doesn't it doesn't hurt my health. Mm-hmm. You're right.
But you just get to look badass.
I just get to look so cool. Like, I have never looked cool. Mm. We talked about this on the way back from your birthday.
Yeah.
Like, I've never looked cooler in my life than when I was smoking.
So no negatives, only positives.
I don't think that I would have ever had sex with a human being had I not been a smoker. I'm not sure. Maybe I probably would have found my way there eventually. Yeah. But like it really set the pace for me in my 20s.
I definitely had 100% of the sex that I had in my life as a smoker.
Yeah.
Well, not like every instance of it, but
right, but it was definitely a part of the narrative, right? Well,
every partner I've ever slept with was while I was a smoker.
Same. Like that's
at some point.
That's part of the thing. Is like if I ever had to go back to like dating or whatever, I'd be like, fuck, I gotta smoke again.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't smoke, and no new pokes.
No. Again, you bring me in for the horn stuff.
Uh-huh. That's good. Uh-huh. That's why you're here.
You know, one of the things that like continually stood out to me through the whole movie was just like, how did this get made? Absolutely. Right? Like how like it, like think about it in context of, because this is Cage Match, but like Nicolas Cage is not a big part of this.
No.
It would have been killer had it been Mickey Rourke, Dennis Hopper, and Nicolas Cage like in the bedroom doing those sequences together. That would have been a really fun watch. I think it could have got wild, but like we didn't get there. So it's just like contextually, this movie, you have one of the biggest directors in the world. Right, he's picking up this IP from S.E. Hinton. He makes Outsiders, which comes out 6 months before, and like that's a kind of a hit.
Oh yeah,
absolutely. It launches careers. It kind of sets the tone for all the big heartthrobs of the '80s. Like it launches that whole thing. He's like, all right, so now I'm gonna do it again. But like, no, I'm not gonna fucking do it again. I'm gonna make this weird ass experimental, kind of jazzy art film that looked beautiful. It's some of the best black and white photography I think I've ever seen in my entire life. I think the only other movie I've seen that looks as good. The Man Who Wasn't There by the Coen Brothers.
Oh, yeah.
It's like just exquisite black and white. And like, this is maybe the best black and white I think I've ever seen.
Well, so this movie was shot like back to back with The Outsiders. Yeah. Like, they kept the exact same production crew and everything. So I think that really helped in the just getting it made was they were writing the screenplay while filming The Outsiders. And
was it the same director of photography between the two?
I'd have to double check, but I know that Coppola wanted to keep like his production crew from Outsiders into this.
Probably would have been.
I mean, you would think. That's and then he was like, hey, maybe
that's a person. That's a person. That's a person at the top of their powers, right? They can like go to any studio, be like, you're going to give me this much money. I'm going to make this movie and this movie simultaneously. And like studio producers, you can't show up. You can't check in on what we're doing. And like maybe they showed up one day on Outsiders, like, oh, these are handsome boys. And like, we're gonna make a ton of money. And they walked off and they didn't check in on Rumblefish. And Rumblefish comes out and you're like, huh.
Yeah. This is the thing, huh?
Yeah, you tilted the camera a lot on this one, didn't you, buddy?
Yeah, so it was. It was Stephen Henry Burham was his name.
I think it looks great.
Oh, he also did Snake Eyes.
Oh, wow.
So
reuniting.
And Mission Impossible.
So I forgot about this in the beginning of the film when they like, the first few like setup scenes, they show like the city and they kind of like have it on a time lapse, but it gave me like those old like the videos they'd show us when we were kids in schools, like you know, the mechanism of the economy.
See, we were able to afford updated videos. We weren't all sharing the same book and
public domain from 1945.
No, I was in Tillamook, Oregon, and they had a legit reel-to-reel projector they'd bring in with these old fucking old-ass tapes.
The only time we ever had to watch one of those was like the first sex ed course I ever went through. City of the future. I will include electricity. Like, I thought it was. And then there's just the
warming nothing
and hard on in through the screen. It's like
erections for all.
It's just a skyscraper being
racing into the sky.
Yeah, trains going into tunnels, rocket ship. Like, oh, wait, this is an innuendo video. It's not sex ed, it's just metaphors.
I'm gonna have a real hard time adjusting to.
Although, you know, Sean, I am I'm sold every time we do like a time lapse at night of a city. If it's a pretty time lapse at night, like I'm just like, let's just do it. Like, let's watch a city go to bed and wake up like over a time lapse. I'm in every freaking time.
What was the big billboard in that scene, that nighttime scene?
Was it just Mayo?
Mayo, I think. Just, actually, it was Mayo. Probably like Mayo Clinic or something, but like the idea of just Mayo a giant sign for
New York.
Oh, yeah. Just a giant sign for
mayonnaise.
Well, you said there was like Burke's magazine or something.
Yeah, the magazine. Yeah. Said something called Hamburger.
Hamburger Magazine?
Hamburger
Magazine. Oh, man.
Makes sense to me.
I would subscribe.
So,
are we going to start a hamburger magazine? Let's do it.
Probably. It'd come out of left field. Nobody would expect it from me.
So, I think it needs to be large format twice a year. Mm. Like a really big, thick one. Like, really put time into it. Like, where you
can like the swimsuit edition.
It's a big format twice a year.
Do one seasonal hot dog.
Real, real thick paper.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there can be a hot dog centerfold. So, that you unfold out. The giant hot dog.
The texture.
Yeah.
You can run your hands over.
Ooh. Yeah. Scratch and sniff page, yeah.
We're on the same page. All right.
Like yes, absolutely. This is going to happen. Yeah. Cool.
Start sourcing right now.
Cage Match, a roundabout way of starting a magazine.
about hamburgers.
So I do want to come back to like Matt Dillon's performance real quick, because I think he's great in this just as the fucking poser kid. Just what's up with the leather cuff? Like, what's up with like the one like leather like fighting cuff?
Just trying to look cool, man.
It's just cool shit.
Trying to look cool.
Yeah. I just like, it's such a vibe, and I definitely knew this guy in high school. Like, I definitely knew that guy who just wanted to be cool and was just projecting that image and story of himself out there. And it was just easier to go along with it than to just be like, nah, dude.
So the Yahoo who comes into our podcast wearing their best fighting blouse has decided to critique the fashion of 1980s small town gang members.
I mean, 80s, man, this was written in the 60s.
Yeah.
I guess the movie moves it forward a little bit, but like, man, Bandana Sean is not happy with Cuffy Dillon.
For our listeners, just so everyone knows, this thing is like buttoned to roughly just above the navel, pure midsection.
Yeah.
Like there's full sternum bush on display.
Sure, I can see your xiphoid process. That's exactly true. Anybody know that?
No,
not a fucking clue.
Oh, good.
It is a small bone that hangs down at the center where your rib cage meets. It meets right here and holds it together.
Is that the one you take off when you want to suck your dick?
There's a lot.
Not gonna hurt.
No, not gonna hurt. Actually, it will separate your rib cage. It's pretty critical linchpin in the whole like chest area. But anyway,
I got zip ties.
This xiphoid process.
That's a weird name for a bone.
I love it.
That joke got me, but it did.
Neat.
Oh man, I kind of wonder like what happened to Matt Dillon. You know what I mean? I think it's the voice. Honestly, the whole time he's
so dumb. And I know he's like so dumb character.
There's no way of taking the Matt Dillon voice and being like, well, you know, he is a respectable authority figure that you should like follow into the
view. Not a fucking
like,
chance.
Like you think about like so. Okay, you take the Outsiders group is really that group. So he was in the Outsiders as well. So you have like Cruz and you have Rob Lowe and you have Swayze and there's a handful of other folks in there. Like, but like he was also in there, but like he could never really break out. And I think it's the voice. I think you're entirely right. I was trying to pinpoint what it is, and it's a meathead voice.
He's got like the real mouth breather look about him too.
Yeah.
Like that's hard to get away from.
A little simian.
Yeah.
Kind of lumpy.
Good looking guy. Not good. Yeah. But monkey.
Yeah, like a good looking monkey.
That is a very handsome monkey.
Yeah.
So like on that line too, like Mickey Rourke was a pretty good looking dude. I mean, he's kind of strange looking. I was thinking about it. It's like if Sam Rockwell and Stephen Dorff fucked, but you know.
Let's take 3 seconds to think about that.
Okay, it's working for me.
It's lovely. Put your arms off. Take them off. Put them on. Take them off, boys.
But yeah, it's kind of a shame. I mean, he really did get fucked up. Like he was. Not a beautiful man, but like.
I think the funny thing is in the movie you see him in the photo, the motorcycle one. He has the long hair and he looks handsome man. His haircut is so stupid.
It's very dumb.
Whatever they do in this, it's so stupid.
It's a real dork job.
Like, it looks like the haircut that every girl who's eventually going to be a lesbian gets in the eighth grade. Mm. And they're like, ah, this is who I am now, I guess.
Yeah. It looked to me like he was going for some kind of a proto version of the Misfits Devil's Lock. Because they like just cut in a widow's peak on him.
Yeah.
It's like
forced widow's peak.
Yeah, yeah, this is my bangs now. This is how it's done.
He has such a gentle voice for the whole thing. So you get Meathead Matt Dillon. He's whatever, I can't do it. I'm not even try. But like it's just like, ah, oh, Rusty, you know, like these are, you know, they belong in the river. Whatever. And then it's just such a contrast to everybody else who's just coming off like really blunt and kind of ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It's a good character, I thought.
Yeah.
It was that scene in the billiard hall when they're just like, nah, man, he's the king. You're never going to get there. Like, you're just not going to happen. Like, that was, there's just a bunch of really great scenes you could cut out and be like, those are very powerful moments. And I think a lot of people in their life have lived through, which is like, they realize something about themselves that they're not going to be. And like, the whole movie is actually Matt Dillon realizing, like, he's not who he thinks he is.
Right.
No, but that scene where it's like, you know, you're not the king. Like, because that's Nick Cage. They're outside Benny's. And it's like, you're not the king. It's like, I would be the king and you'd be like a second lieutenant. Like, that's the line or something. But like, at the end of that, like, confrontation, when like Rusty James realizes that, you know, he's not who he thinks he is. He's kind of a joke. He goes to, you know, hand off the baton, like hand the pool cue to Nick Cage. And like, it's like, all right, it's you. And Nick Cage just like, what the fuck, dude? Just cut it out. Like,
yeah.
Like, we stop doing this now.
Right. I have Diane Lane.
Mm-hmm.
The gang does not exist. You're a silly man. Please stop doing performance.
I want a movie about that other gang. The one they
actually like effective gang. The guy who got motorcycled.
Yeah.
The guy got up until he got motorcycled. Also, like, Rusty James, he gets his stomach cut open with a big old piece of glass, and then gets fucking piped to the head later. Like, this movie gets super serious, then gets super like just jokey real quick.
Yeah, I just think it's a dreamscape. The whole thing, it's just like a weird, fevery, surreal dream, which is a cop out. I could have like leaned in and said yes, Angel. But like the whole thing is just like it is ridiculous. Like, it's just like young men being idiots. And like over imagining their lives nonstop, and you're stuck with this guy who thinks he's going to be the most important human being ever. He's like, hey, kind of a dill,
kind of a Matt Dillon.
Dillon. That's what he's a Matt Dillon. Yeah. But yeah, the fight scene. Actually, I really like the fight scene. It reminded me a lot of Clockwork Orange, the big like gang scene there. And I think maybe a little bit was a play on that, which is like the gangs are so serious in that. And it might be the same thing. So in like Clockwork Orange, the gangs are aging out and they're just becoming older men. And that's what it is. Like, there'll probably be younger people who like take over gangs or become gangs. And this is the same thing. Like, you're too old for this shit, man.
Right.
Like, it's not fun anymore.
Unlike Warriors, where being a gang is still incredible. Yeah.
Right.
You could dress up like a baseball boy or a clown or
whatever you want, man.
Yeah. That's what I liked about the other gang. They kind of had a theme going.
Yeah.
They were real gang. That's the difference.
Theme murder?
Kinda.
Virgins.
They kinda had like a vibe.
Yeah. I still do think it felt like a Double Dragon fight.
Oh yeah.
You show up, everybody kind of kicking, a knife flies off, you pick up the knife, you can throw it twice before it disappears. Mm-hmm. Some guy shows up with a motorcycle.
Before the fight actually gets going, when they're just kind of like swinging at each other, Rusty James does do the kind of like the like hopping double kick a couple times.
Mm-hmm. It's very video game. Like later on when Rusty gets hit in the head with the pipe and then Bicycle Boy. Sorry, motorcycle.
Well, he didn't have the motorcycle at the
point. Yeah, so. Boy. Motorcyclist Boy shows up and like fights. Like it's the worst choreography.
It does bring us to the out-of-body experience.
Yeah.
I like that scene a lot, actually. Yeah. That was a cool effect.
Yeah, so I was watching it in a chair with my headphones on, and the family was like over here doing stuff, right? Doing their own thing. And like that showed up and I just went like hands up in the air, like, what the fuck is this? Like I was not expecting it, like I was kind of delighted nonstop by all the decisions that were being made because like after the first 20 minutes, it just was not boring. Like, there was not a boring scene. Everything was kind of visually interesting. They were making crazy decisions. Like, did it add up to the best movie or anything? Absolutely not. So, but if I was going to steal from a movie as a film director, I would steal out of this movie like fucking crazy. Yeah. There's so many things you could just rob from this movie and then put it into a better movie, and it would be awesome.
I think that's the most agreeable sentence I've heard from this. I was not a huge fan of this.
Yeah.
I'll get that out of the way. It was the longest hour and a half that I think I've ever spent on this podcast.
Sure. That's saying a lot too. Oh my God.
Longer than Croods 2?
Yeah, dude. This movie just like, it felt like a full 2-hour film when I was watching it. Maybe it's the theatricality, being the theater major who doesn't like theater. It doesn't catch me. It's just, there were some moments where I was like, yeah, that's great. I forgot what got me started on this.
I think it's a menu of really interesting vignettes and scenes and ideas. You know what I mean? And like, it feels like Coppola was like, really just scrubbing and trying to make like an indie movie, trying things, really like fucking around and like feeling his way through it. It felt like that. So like, you know, they're just shots that look really great. Them walking through the downtown and like the audio shifts based on the character who's talking is a really brilliant idea. And then like the out of body thing where he just like is floating through could have been terrible. But again, you're right. When you put a lot of forced artsy shit together.
Yeah, you're dragging me through a lot to try to sell this film to me.
It's like the whole time I was thinking, oh, sorry, go for it, John.
Oh, well, and that's kind of where I wanted to like finally bring this to is, so it's called Rumblefish, and the big metaphor for their situation at the end is, are these fighting fish, are the Rumblefish that Mickey Rourke's obsessed with, wants to steal and like set free. And we get that like really on the nose scene, but I feel like it worked really well. After Motorcycle Boy's dead, Rusty James is like throwing the fish in the water, and when he's thrown up against the cop car, and for the first time he's in color, like he sees his own reflection as those trapped fish, and that's when he decides to leave.
I love that kind of crap. I don't know why it was earned. They really held it for a long time. Yeah
I thought it was earned. Like it's like I said, it's a little on the nose, but I loved it.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of stuff like that, but I agree, like there's just these moments like, ah, I felt good, and it wasn't too much. Like it's like the whole movie didn't flip to color, it was just like a flash and then you come back. Yeah,
well, and then there's that like extended, and I love how it ended with that extended long shot of the entire cast learning about Motorcycle Boy's death. And it's cut, and it's like everyone has their kind of like little like moment of like, you see everyone's like immediate reaction to the death. And then it just cuts to Motorcycle Boy Reigns and the silhouette of Matt Dillon like riding off to California. I'm like,
which is super theatrical. It's like what Nick keeps talking about. It is a very stage play. So there's a guy named James or Jamie Lloyd. I forget how you actually say his name, but he's like the hot shit on like the West End and Broadway, and everything he does has like projection screens and sexy people, tight underwear, and it's like all that kind of stuff. Like this felt like a Jamie Lloyd production of a movie, right? Had he been around in like 1983, I feel like he would have made this movie.
I'm going to make a controversial statement here. I think my favorite character was the cop, because when he killed Motorcycle Boy, it meant the movie was over.
Sure.
Otherwise, the cops sucked.
Yeah, right. The cops are pretty bad.
If you ask Nick what the narrative was, it was about a hard-nosed cop in Missouri who's dealing with a bunch of really fucking pretentious assholes.
Protecting a pet store.
Who does nothing but steal from pet stores and saves the
cause fights.
Saves the day again. God. Just keeps showing up.
Sick-ass mustache.
I will say, the fucking bullet wound was, like, pretty gnarly.
Yeah. I do like the cop a lot. So
I like how he like just stood there.
Yeah.
He was like a monolith of like antagonism.
He was angel of death.
Yeah.
Like he was just waiting like the whole time. He was like, because he went, why are you
never
here?
See his eyes?
Why are you just showing up? He's like, well, because
it's like shadow.
Motorcycle boy was a dead man. Like he's out. Like he came back from California. He's destroyed. He doesn't want to be a part of this. He doesn't know where to go. So he's gonna go.
He's like Chekhov's gun.
There was a
eventually he's gonna go
Chekhov's
up.
Chekhov's cop. Yeah.
Yeah. Chekhov's cop.
Yeah. We have a lot of Chekhov's cops in the country these days.
That is true. They're always going to get
one. Sure.
Fuck cops.
They show up in the screen early on in the newsreel, and well, that's going to turn into a problem, and it usually does, not to get too political, but there we are.
Well, like, I mean, the cop even has his own, other than just, yeah, being, you know, the harbinger of doom, you know, also when Rusty James, like, asks him in the middle of the films, like, what's your problem with Motorcycle Boy? And the cop's response is like, I see the one thing you don't, which is, you know, everyone looks up to this thing and up to Motorcycle Boy and like romanticizes that. And he's like, that's just trouble. That's just going to lead to more dead kids. And, you know, in the end kills Motorcycle Boy. And the other cops want to take in Rusty James. And he's the one who's like, no, let him go. Like, this is over now.
Yeah. There is heavily an element of like, this is the end of an era.
Yeah.
The whole thing. Like, the whole thing starts as, like, we're at the very tail end of something and people need to, like, transition and move on kind of thing. Like,
yeah.
It's the decay of, like, this previous culture that maybe wasn't so great to begin with, but, like, the romanticism is wearing off. And I think, like, we were talking about earlier, like, Cage's whole thing about, like, why are you handing this pool cue? This is stupid. Like, we're out of this. You know what I mean? Like, just move on. You're being a child.
Yeah.
All right. Final thoughts?
I liked it. I said that at the beginning. I'm saying it again.
It grew on me a lot, for sure. I understand where you're coming from, though, Nick.
No, I mean, it's fine. I'm not upset about not liking it.
Right.
It's not going to make me lose sleep.
Did you watch Primal right after it as a palate cleanser?
No, I think I just went and cranked one out.
There we go. Yeah.
To Diane Lane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Diane Lane.
To
God bless Diane Lane.
Modern Diane Lane.
It's so good.
Diane Lane in any decade, let's be fair. She's working it. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't like it for the first 20 minutes. I fell asleep last night, but it was a bad time to start. I watched it again this afternoon and ended up really enjoying it. Will I watch it again ever? No. But will I go and find scenes from it online and probably like look at it a little deeper? No.
I'm busy.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I got shit themes to look at on Instagram or something. I'm not studying themes from Rumblefish. I think it's totally worth a watch. I think especially if you're into photography and that's part of like what you like about movies, like it looks great.
Yeah.
If you have the longest hour and a half of your life just sitting there in front of you with nothing else to do.
If the doctor tells you the cancer is incredibly aggressive and you have 2 hours left.
Whoa, do something better.
Make some macaroni and cheese. Well, you just want it to spread out. You just want to see how long a bowl of mac and cheese that takes about 15 minutes to make.
Mm-hmm.
And then watch Rumblefish, and you know, and you get another month. You got one more month of your life right there.
I think if I had if I had an hour and a half to live, I would probably do the most like ridiculous, like unbelievable. Like I would have sex with that bowl of mac and cheese.
Sure,
and I'd leave it on the counter.
That's like 3 minutes.
That's somebody else. Yeah,
Max, you're done.
He was like, I'm already hot and bothered by their mixing noises.
I think if you're going to have an hour and a half, you got to leave post-nut clarity for like the last 45 seconds. Like that has to be an epiphany moment.
Mm.
Like you have to like save that for the very last minute. And then you do the thing and you're like, oh, I get it now. And then you're out.
What if I have sex with the mac and cheese?
Mm.
Okay.
I watch the last 45 seconds. Just the last 45 seconds.
Sure. Like,
straight to it.
Yeah.
Fucking garbage memes on Instagram the rest of the day.
then we'll say you lived a great life.
That's a life well lived.
Yeah, going out strong.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening. you can find us on social media. I don't know. Probably. We haven't done much on that lately. But you can support us if you want. And if not, I don't care.
Yeah, buy my next box of mac and cheese, please.
Yeah, Nick needs mac and cheese.
I'm running out. I stopped smoking, and now I just can't get laid.
But yeah, thank you to our Sparkle Buddies, Josh, Josie, Rico, Matt, Adam, Bill, and Stuart, and to our Cage Dancers, Ira, John, Freeman, Nathan, and Cameron. Thank you guys for listening and supporting Rusty James.
I love you all very much.
Rusty James.
Rusty James.
That's dumb.
Bye.
There we go.
I nailed it.
For a second. That was harmony.
Yeah.
Cruel harmony, but harmony nonetheless.
That's what my karaoke was like last night.
Cruel harmony.
For everyone else.